Okay, John, a little bit of a quiz this morning. Okay. Identify this all sound. Right. Here's a countdown. You tell me what it is.
8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3. So that's a bunch of people in a bar watching a space shuttle launch?
No. It's not New
Gross.
Year's. No. I guess you could compare the Congress to a people in a bar. That's actually something that Nancy Pelosi can clear up for you.
The yeas are 220. The nays are 215. The bill is passed.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi making that historic call on Saturday night. The Democrats were counting down the seconds until it was official that their health care reform bill had passed. And then,
Saturday
you know,
night
cheers.
Live. Yeah, there in the House.
That's
yeah.
right. Live from the House. It's Saturday Night Live. Here's a couple. We were watching the Twitter feeds, and there's extremely different characterizations of this vote. We have one from somebody named Kelly Burton RT said, 218 plus U.S. congressmen saddle Americans with the largest albatross in history. May the Senate reject it resoundingly. And Karen's tweets, number 218, if I could hug all of you, I would. Thank you for being fantastic human beings. So which is it? Is this a gigantic albatross or is this a huge victory? We're joined now by Todd Zwillick, our Takeaway Washington correspondent. Good morning, Todd.
Hi, good morning.
So tell me, set the scene for us. What was it like during this vote in the House on this health care reform bill?
Yeah, lots of activity on the floor. The entire House present and very active running around the floor, probably a little bit of last-minute whipping going on. We're all up in the press gallery just above the House chamber. You can't really see it on TV, but we're sort of right above the members watching the big board. There's a great big board on the back wall with all 435 members' names on it and lights, green for yay, red for nay, amber for present, which happens once in a while. And instead of watching the floor, you're spending a lot of time really watching the board to see who votes how. You know, we knew there was going to be a lot of moderate and conservative Democrats from the South, from those red states who rode Barack Obama's coattails in that last landslide election, who weren't going to be voting for this bill. So you got to watch the board and see where the votes are. Then you turn around and watch the floor and see if there's any Republicans who might be crossing over. There was one Republican who voted for this bill, and that's Joseph Gao. He's a Republican, but he represents the lower Ninth Ward of New Orleans, and he got in because the guy who represented the lower Ninth Ward got indicted for bribery. So now he's a Republican in Congress, and he was sandwiched between a senior Republican and Eric Cantor, the Republican whip, sitting next to him
right.
until he voted. Then he put his green card in, and he voted with the Democrats. Cantor was very disappointed.
Okay, so Todd, kind of surprisingly, abortion turned out to be a big part of the last-minute negotiations before the vote. Very quickly, what happened here?
Yeah, there was an amendment sponsored by conservative pro-life Democrats. They demanded a vote on an amendment that would make it basically impossible for anyone purchasing insurance, health insurance on the national exchange that's envisioned in this bill from purchasing a plan that covers abortion, even with their own money. That is tighter than current law. It passed 240 to 194. A broad coalition passed this amendment before the final bill passed. Now, pro-choice Democrats, pro-choice progressives in the House were absolutely furious. Here's Diana DeGette. She's a deputy whip, and she's head of the pro-choice caucus. Listen to her.
This is a vast expansion of choice restrictions. It's probably the biggest restriction on a woman's right to choose that will have been considered on the House floor in my career.
And DeGette and her allies were forced to roll over on this. They lost that vote, but many of them voted to pass the bill anyway
right.
because they said it was just too important.
And that may or may not survive when they reconcile it with the Senate. But let's go now to Trudy. Thanks very much, Todd Zwillick. He's our Takeaway Washington correspondent. And let's turn to Trudy Lieberman now, contributing editor to the Columbia Journalism Review and healthcare blogger for CJR.org. So, Trudy, we have questions from our listeners. I'm gonna play some of these comments from our listeners. The first one is from Sean, New Jersey, and he's concerned about cost.
I'm Sean from Bradley Beach, and the one most important thing I'd like to see in the health care bill is competition. It's the one thing our insurance industry in health care doesn't really have.
So does this House bill that they passed on Saturday foster competition between insurance companies?
Well, ostensibly, the public plan option is supposed to do that, but the latest numbers out from the Congressional Budget Office show that only about 6 million people will be able to join the public plan anyway. Those would be individuals who do not have insurance from their employer or small businesses buying coverage for their workers. So the plan is going to be very limited. The CBO also said that they expect that the costs will be even higher for some people in the public plan because it's likely to attract sicker people, which means the insurance companies have to raise the price. So I don't know that we can really expect much competition, but I think the thing to remember here is that the cost drivers in the system are really not the insurance companies. They're the doctors and hospitals, and they are the ones who set the prices.
Okay, so we actually had a comment from Bill in Brooklyn about those costs.
Physicians are paid over twice as much as they are in Britain, where the standard of living is about the same. I think doctors should be very well compensated for their work, but I don't think we should be making them multimillionaires. I think it's not good for their character, and I don't think it's good for the public.
So he's talking about controlling the costs that you were talking about. Does this bill do that?
Not very well. The cost control measures in this bill, as well as in the Senate bill, are rather weak. And I think it's important to note that the doctors are very intent on getting their growth formula cut, and that means that the scheduled fee cuts will not be taking effect. And so they're working very hard right now in Congress to make sure that those fee cuts that have been scheduled for over a decade now will not happen.
And the fact that those cost-cutting moves aren't in the House bill is a victory for Republicans. That's an irony here, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So quickly, Trudy, we just have about a minute left, but I wanted you to play something from George Miller, a Democrat from California. He said, the most important words never again will be Americans be without health insurance. They will never lose their insurance again. And I'm wondering, is that true? Is this going to cover Americans forever and ever in perpetuity?
There are lots of ways that people will not still be covered under health insurance. I'll give you one very quickly. The House bill, as well as the Senate bills, requires the companies or allows the companies, insurance companies, to age rate. That means that they can charge older people much more than they can charge younger people, which will mean some of those people will not be able to afford the insurance.
Okay, Trudy Lieberman is the contributing editor to the Columbia Journalism Review and healthcare blogger for CJR.org. Thanks, Trudy.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.